Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast, the official source of audio accounts for the Near Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm Chaz Hathaway, author of Life in the Spirit World, What Near Death Experiences May Teach About Life on the Other Side. And I have an exciting announcement. Again, it's like a week of exciting announcements. We have reached $50 on the Patreon page, which means that those who contribute any amount on the Patreon page will now be getting a bonus podcast episode every week. And that's exciting. I'm so excited to be releasing them more often. I'm excited that we're having this level of success. And it's because of you guys. It's totally because of this community. You guys are incredible. You've been so supportive. You've been just amazing. So if you would like to get that extra episode a week, just pop on over to patreon.com/ndecast and become a monthly contributor, and you'll get the bonus episode each week. So today we are going to share the experience of Kathy, who has her experience on the Near Death Experience Research Foundation website. And Kathy says, "I had a rough life as a child growing up. My parents were very strict with me, not allowing me to have any friends. They kept me in the house and even had a tutor coming to the house to school me. At age 16, I got sick of it all, and I just wanted to end my life. I took a whole bottle of my father's medications, which I believe had something to do with his heart. My mother had been running errands. When she came home and found me on my bed, I was just barely alive. She called 911 and they rushed me to the nearest hospital. I was taken directly into the emergency room and they immediately began working on me. They were trying to pump my stomach for any remaining pills, hooking me up to machines, etc. I could hear everyone talking and the doctors giving instructions to the nurses on what to do. Then I heard these words, 'We are losing her.' I could hear my heart barely beating on the heart monitor, and then it stopped. I was standing outside my body, at the head of my body, but behind all of the emergency room staff as they worked frantic to revive me and bring me back to life. I wasn't in any pain. In fact, I felt nothing. But I stood there in shock to see my body lying on the gurney while they worked on me. I watched as they pulled out the pads to shock my heart, put tubes down my throat, and were placing IVs in my arm. Then I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned to look at who it was, and then I was gone. That's when I found myself surrounded in total darkness. There were no floors, no walls, no ceiling, nothing. I was huddled down with my arms wrapped around my folded legs and my head buried in the bends of my knees in a fetal position. Then I heard a voice. It was a deep voice, but it was comforting at the same time. I turned to look in the direction of the voice and saw a man standing there. He had no wings, so I assume he wasn't an angel. He was wearing a long leather coat that went all the way to the floor. His hair was combed back as if he had gel in it. The man was standing there and appeared as if he had something in his fingers, like he was playing with it or rolling it around, but there was nothing in his fingers, kind of like picking at his fingernails. He tilted his head towards me and said, 'This isn't what you wanted, is it?' I started to cry and replied, 'No, it was stupid, and I was only trying to get attention.' Then he said to me, 'Do you see the light?' I looked around, and far off into the distance was this light, like looking through a prism with rainbow colors generated from it. But it was very far away and very little to see, but it was there. That's when he said to me, 'Suicides are not allowed to receive the light. they remain in the darkness. I don't know if he was using this as a scare tactic to frighten me, or if he was speaking the truth, but I wasn't going to question him. Then he spoke the words which I will never forget, as he said, "Life is a gift, and it's not up to us to take it." At first I didn't understand what he meant, but later I knew as I figured it out. He then said to me, "It's not your time, and I'm going to send you back, but I'm also going to put you to work for us. You'll know when the time is right and how to accept it and learn to use it." I had no clue to what he meant by that, but I agreed with him. I told him, "Thank you," and I was sent back. I woke up lying in a hospital bed, connected to so many machines with tubes down my throat. There were heart machines and so many sounds of beeping. I was hooked up to an oxygen machine and anything else they could connect me to. But when I awoke, I heard voices. I heard sounds like I was standing in a crowded room and everyone was all talking at once. It was like being at a party or a gathering. But the only people there were the nurses sitting at the nurse's station next to me. They weren't talking, but working quietly, staring at patient charts and writing down notes in them. I realized I was in the ICU unit, and there were other patients in there with me. The nurse came over to check on me and noticed my eyes open. She was excited and started asking me to blink, nod my head, move my fingers and toes. I had no problem doing any of it. I looked at a clock on the wall across from me, and it was showing 2 a.m. I was able to turn my head and look out the window. I noticed it was dark outside, so I assumed I had been out for just a few hours. My mother must have found me earlier, around 4 p.m. on my bed. I thought I had been out until 2 a.m. that morning. I was wrong. The nurse told me that I had been in a coma for 32 days. She told me not to try to do anything strenuous and not to speak too much because I needed to rehabilitate myself. I was weak and my mind was a huge blank. I don't remember anything while being in this coma. Nothing. I had no dreams. I heard no noises. It was just one big blank. I wanted to know why I had heard all these voices around me, so I asked the nurse. She asked, "What voices?" At that point, I thought I might have brain damage. I was assured that there was nothing wrong with me. As far as brain damage was concerned, I was fine. I'm going to pause to apologize. It's the day after Christmas, and my kids are fighting over the new pogo stick that the family got. And playing with all their baubles and toys that they got for Christmas. So, anyway, back to Kathy's account. It was another week before they released me, as doctors ran tests on me to make sure there wasn't any damage. My parents came to visit and spend time with me. They were mad, of course, but soon realized that I wanted to have a normal childhood and to be treated right. Then I got released and sent home, but also was on doctor's orders to remain on bed rest and try to regain my strength back before doing anything. The voices continued, but not as much since I was at home. A few years later, I realized that I was hearing the dead speak. They didn't talk to me, but I could hear them. When I acknowledged them, then they were talking to me and excited that I could hear them and speak to them. It took years to figure it all out and learn to adjust to my new gift. I had to learn to shut it off, like turning off the dial on the radio to make the voices stop. Then I only would allow them to speak to me when I was ready or wanted them to speak to me. Now, being 58 years old, I use this gift to help the dead receive the light. I also help others who are wanting to end their life. I let them know that it's not the way out and what will happen if they do. I share my experience with them. Now, I know why that man sent me back and said he had work for me to do. Now I understand and use my experience and gifts to help others who are stuck in between realms or are stuck on earth in spirit. My gift is powerful, and sometimes it is more than I can handle, but I have proven to many that it's real and have showed them to prove my point. I have made the ones who doubt believe. And that is the end of Kathy's experience. Interesting, very interesting. So she goes straight to the void and is told in the void that you're going to have to stay here for your suicide. That's what suicides do. They stay in the darkness and are unable to go to the light. Now, she admits she didn't know if he was using a scare tactic or if he was telling the truth. But which is an interesting point, because usually in that state, people can totally read each other's intents. But perhaps for a gifted teacher, it may be something that's, you know, it could be that going to the light is not going to bring the light into your person, and therefore it's not enough. I don't know. It just doesn't say. But what is clear from this is that, again, as we've said again and again from these many suicide experiences, suicides are not the answer. They're just not a way out. They're simply a hiccup in our life plans. And trying to end our lives by suicide is just a way to delay the inevitable. And to and if we overcome the problems and challenges and suffering in this life, or at least endure through it, it's going to be much better for us. That seems to be the overwhelming thought about suicides. That's not to say that every suicide experience ends up staying in the dark the whole time. That just hasn't proven to be true, but there is probably some kind of truth to those words, that they can't fully embrace the light in a suicide kind of situation, especially to those who still have possibility of returning. So suicide's not the answer. Now, Kathy's after effects are kind of interesting and probably freaky from some people's point of view, and probably kind of freaky to her sometimes. But when you've been on the other side, what I gather is that when you've been on the other side and you come to know how real and alive and healthy and loving the dead are, it's not a ghost story thing. It's not some weird phantom thing. It's a gift. And to be able to hear people who have died is, you know, essentially she's got a smartphone with which to talk to those who have died. And they are every bit as alive and more so than those on this side who are struggling and suffering and pain and tiredness and fatigue and all that stuff. They're more alive there than we are here. And so she is able to hear the voices of the dead. And for a while, she's just like, okay, this is a weird, you know, side effect, brain damage, something or other. The doctors insist she's healthy, that she's fine. But she comes to find out that this is a gift that is given to her to help people. And it sounds like she's helping those who are on, who have died, who are on this side and need guidance to go toward the light, or to go to the light. And also for those who are here who want to communicate with people who have died. And that is an incredible gift. And honestly, I mean, I've heard stories of mediums and so forth, and we all know of you know, circus hoaxes of sorts, where it appears that that's what's taking place, but there's some trick of the mind or the eyes or whatever that's making the convincing happen and so forth. And that's just not just doesn't seem to be what's happening in these cases of people who have had near-death experiences, and the after effects give them the ability to communicate with the other side. It seems that that is a very real thing. And so, you know, that's interesting to me. Also, today we have a listener comment, and it's a very interesting one. This is Stephen, and he actually sends a couple of emails, one after the other, and so I'm going to go ahead and read those, and then we'll talk about them. Stephen says, "First, I love your podcast. I'm so blessed to have found it. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. Although I have not had the classic near-death experience, I have had experience with reaching the same pool of nous you mentioned in one of your episodes. In the episode, a girl had died and found a bag that looked like a womb sac, then discovered it to be a repository of knowledge from droplets of water, each life lived by entities. Her experience is explained in the Corpus Hermeticum. Have you read it?" And then he quotes from the Corpus Hermeticum, which says, 3. "Therefore, O Tat, God has given the word to all men to partake in, but not so with Nous. He was not jealous, for jealousy of any one eight does not originate from there, but is created in the souls of men who have no Nous. Tat, then why, O Father, has God not given to everyone a share of Nous? H. He willed, my son, to set it up as a prize before souls. 4. Tat. And where did he set it up? H. He filled a great bowl with Nous and sent it down, and he appointed a herald to make this announcement to the hearts of men. Plunge into this bowl if you can, having faith that you will rise to him that sent down the bowl, realizing why you came into being." That's the end of the quote, and we continue with Stephen's words. He says, note that he says, word to partake in. Word is John 1. You might not know this. What you might not know is this. Aleph Bet is the spelling for the Hebrew word father. It means strong house. In other words, the way a human body is programmed is with Aleph Bet, letters DNA, and word. It's the waters of baptism, or the pathway to the pool of learning. No one comes to the Father, Aleph Bet, but by the word, Son of God. We are all sons of God, baptized into the waters below. And yes, you must be born again and again. My book, The Present is the Gift, is 288 pages showing all the passages from the Bible hiding this fact of rebirth again and again. I know you are not of this train, so I'll just mention my position. If you are interested, my own experiences with the other side have come from meditation. From this, I have written 5 books on the topic of how Sanskrit and Hebrew reveal the essence of religion and ritual. Sanskrit is the great mother. This is the inner world by religions, Eastern. Hebrew is the father and son in the outer world. To see the complete mystery, you need to embrace both parents. All religions are found from the word, or the language programming our life. Religion is the pretext. Life we may allow ourselves to believe, I think. While the word is the source code. My books cover this. The greatest gift I have received is a blueprint of 10 dimensions and how dimensions work, which explains how to visualize where we go when the gate of life opens. In truth, it should be called a near life experience. Life only happens on the plane of being called sattva, mind only. Death and karma happen here in the illusion of life. There are lots of details I can share if you ever want to dialogue on these topics. I've attached the 10 dimensions. When you meditate, you end the lower six realms, crossing the river to enter the promised land from Egypt. By ending the lower six streams, you enter your mind at rest in dimension 7, learning, followed by dimension 8, realization, and finally 9, Son of God's collective mind. Zion/Israel is unity with the first image of God. God the Father is dimension 10, which is where we all find our source as relatives to the relative prime, Son of God in dimension 9. We all branch from his mind. The veil of dimension 6/7 keeps us from seeing into the collective. Detail level of 9 if you are paying attention. As you reread this, consult the attachment. Note that if a tree grows line/branch/fold, this is literally the tree of life in the matrix of word and letters programming word, son and father. It's a hologram. Time expresses the same way. Time and space are both one thing in parallel to mind, also expressing as line of thinking, branching thought and folded thought. From mind, a folded thought collapses into a branching of possibilities. Then the ones we select then turn into a linear version we can experience into time/space. When a person exits the body, they are removed from the lower six realms and placed back into their mind as awareness, which is then free from the branching of time and space below. This is what happens when we meditate. In reality, we meditate to make this dream of life possible. Awakening the higher mind above ends the dream below, which is the definition of the Sanskrit word Bodh or Buddha, which means awakening. Maya, Sanskrit for illusion, is Buddha's mother. Breaking the illusion of womb of time/space is the moment we see for the first time from above. Meditation here is really unmeditation. This is all explained in the Diamond Sutra and in my book, Bow with Unity. Anyway, I would love to talk sometime. Feel free to shoot me an email or call. I'll tell you my experience. My website on the simple topics for my books is here, alephbetblog.org. And let me read to you from the attachment that he attached, and then we'll read the second email that he sent. Universal Dimensional Structure 10, Absolute Mind of Invariance, neutral/positive, unmanifest, Dzogchen. Mind, sattva/arupa loka, Brahma, Israel mind in translational image mirrored. 9, bodhisattva, folded mind as image of absolute. 8, realization, branching mind into relative. 7, learning, line of relatives into time. And then the next section says, time, rajas/kamaloka. Vishnu, Babylon image of mind into time. 6, heaven, folded timelines of all beings. Mara is ruler, indeterminate wave function. 5, humanity, branching timelines of all beings, each Manu chooses, collapse of wave function. 4, anger, line of time into form, Yama judges. The next section says space, tama/rupa loka, Shiva, Egypt image of process, Egypt, image of process as shadow of mind into form. 3, Anamalya, form or 3D object. 2, hunger, branch of line, two-dimensional plane. 1, hell, line, one-dimensional line. For a complete guide to this chart, see the book, Thus Saith the Flame to the Spark. Okay, and then let's go on to his second email. And he says, right at the beginning, he says, detail level 10 on your scale. We'll take it. He says, and this is Stephen again. I've only listened to just over half of your podcasts, so if I misspeak, let me know. Reincarnation seems to be something you discount as a true view, but consider who it is being reborn. Unity is one being branching into many, yet the lower realm of sin and death is impermanent. This temporary being is only reflective of your higher being, which is never changing. The translation of this being must be seen in a mirror that cannot reflect its true essence fully in the lower realms. In other words, God cannot make an image of himself that is autonomous without first allowing it to walk away from the reflection in the mirror. To accomplish this, the image must not know its perfect being above fully, or it would never be able to live as an individual becoming baptism's purpose. The only way to avoid being a puppet of our perfected first face, we must wear an ego or false identity. This is learning. It's temporary. Breaking the illusion of ego, we again remember our true essence above. Bud, awaken, and Maya as mother, illusion. These two words give you the keys to the entire mystery locked in both Hebrew and Sanskrit. Buddha is the mind we all share when awakened to our collective mind in unity. The Son of God, Lord, is the Ishvara, Yahweh, is one. We are all images of the Lord, Son of God, Colossians 1, 15 through 17. Find this in the Hebrew word Find this in the Hebrew root for Amen, which is A-M-N, Aleph, Men, Nun. This is the word true, but in Greek, it's Lamb, true, or east, Lamb, west. A-M-N in Greek and Latin is as a linguistic root. Follow the letters Aleph Bet / Father, and you can understand the word, who you are here, who you are in the water. And then he lists these words. He says, Amen, Lamb, Amni, Amni, River of Life, Amnio, Bull catching the sacrifice of Lamb in ancient Rome, Amnion, sac covering the baby in the womb, amniotic, fluid of the womb, also mixed with the blood of the amnio in ritual sacrifice, amnesia, condition of the lamb at birth, anamnesia, rediscovery of forgotten knowledge or talents as residual images left behind by past lives. You must be born again. Amnesty, when God forgets. Damnation, or damnation, when God remembers sin. That's very interesting. Anyway, continuing with his email. Note that our condition in the body of the lamb for sacrifice is amnesia. It is a prerequisite. Notice how easily this information could be made into a religion, which is how our source book becomes dogma. Now read my article on rebirth. This is a summary of my book, The Present is the Gift. It's also the introduction to my book, Enlightenment and Ritual. And then that is found on his site, bhaktisattva.blogspot.com. And then he goes on. One being is being born again and again, yet each life is then born from above once. Both are true. Many lives and one life. It is the essence of relative nature. John 3 explains this. First water, then spirit, birth once. Water many times. Living in the person and body is your true life in a womb, sattva. Death is ending the experience and gaining a new life of experiences before the true life above engages. Born from above once. One life is the baby in the womb many days, lives. Many bodies in death, which is an illusion. You cannot die. You have never been anything other than good and have never lost anything. The baby is in the womb, or the baby in the womb is safe. The person will die below, ego. The one who perishes is the one you rise above. Your lower nature is always the evil one ending in destruction. The Lord, guardian, as scapegoat. I can explain this to you from the life of the Lord. That article is here at bhaktisva.blogspot.com, and it's an article called Yahweh, Lord, and Son of God. It's important to know, continuing his email, it's important to know that Satan is our conscience and nothing more, the accuser. Even the Lord had one to overcome, a devil to battle, which ends death before the resurrection. See 1 Corinthians 15 to see the Son handing creation back to the Father to end death. My article on Yahweh explains how the vengeful Lord is overcome by the waters of baptism, realizing his own ill will and anger, his own wrong view and wrong desires to rule over others. He judges himself by judging the host, thereby paying the price of our sin, his own sin. His ego is his own scapegoat, which is then a pattern for us searching for our own higher values. Even the Son had to accomplish this, which is how we all do the same. It is an untold story hidden in the Bible. To see this correctly, you must have a non-dual view. You are the Lord, you forgive and judge. He is the host he shows mercy to, he is the host he shows mercy to, his own reflection in the lower waters. He was required to overcome. You and I are required to overcome. It's parallel. He can't judge you, and you can't judge him. We are the ones we would judge or forgive collectively. The Son is the collective. You and I are the host as relatives to him. He is the relative to God. God is love, 1 John 4, and keeps no record of wrongs, 1 Corinthians 13. Feel free to disagree. It's the point of our illusion. It's the point of our illusion. Remember, great doubt is the best way to rise above the same. It's why we are here. What I'm showing you here may engage your own questioning. And he capitalizes quest in questioning. No answers without the guest. Kam Muni Kate. Kam means with. Muni is the sage, or meaning duty. Kate is where we get our word cater, or the prepare inside and bring out. Communication is the matrix of letters, Father, and Word, Son of God, learning. It is created, it's a created reality, programmed simulation. Children learn to be more than children. This is why we are loved unconditionally until we grow up. See 1 Corinthians 13, and completeness in the mirror. That's the overview of my position. Let me know where you diverge. Yoga, meaning union, is to joining of one Manu to another Manu. Manu in the Sanskrit is the word man in English, meaning to think. And that is the end of Stephen's emails. Fascinating, fascinating, Stephen. Thank you so much for sharing this. And while you're correct that we do differ on some of the points that you make, I really think that your points are worth sharing for a couple of reasons. One, because this is a journey that we're all on and trying to figure out together, if we don't share our different views, how can we ever come, like you say, how can we come to learn beyond where we are now if we're not willing to explore beyond what we now know? And so I love this. I love that you share this. I'm also fascinated by your the kind of the breakdown of the different word roots. I'm a secretly a linguistic junkie in a few ways, especially as it relates to word roots. It's just something I'm geek about, not certainly anything I've studied in any great detail. I kind of considered for a short time when I was deciding what to study in college, kind of considered linguistics, but I knew that 90% of what we would study would be totally disinteresting to me, but the 10% is what I was, you know, excited about. But so I didn't end up studying it because of that. But I'm fascinated by word roots, and I love this breakdown that you give especially with the words AMN, which is the word root that we use for the word amen, and the AMN means lamb. Omni is river of life. Omnio or amnio suddenly starts sounding familiar to us in our Latin scientific, you know, medical field and so forth. Suddenly you're talking about amniotic fluid, which, you know, kind of fits with river of life, lamb, you know, this symbolic birth and so forth. And then I love how you mention, you know, the amnesty is when God forgets, and damnation is when God remembers sin. Such an interesting breakdown. Very interesting. And honestly, too, in a lot of the points that when it comes to philosophical ideas, religious ideas, discussions, and so forth, so much of what we think we disagree on turns out to be a difference of semantics. Basically, you know, one person's word for baptism means one thing, another person's word for baptism means another thing, but when you break the things down into what the actual, what they're saying, what they're trying to suggest, that whole package idea, you find out, oh, we may be talking about two different things, but we actually agree on most aspects of those two different things. And so even the things that we think that we are completely clashing, you know, completely different views on, usually when you break down what those views really are, you find out you're mostly disagreed and that, I mean, you're mostly agreed, and that that small bit of disagreement makes up for such a small part of what it comes down to. And I say that because it's important that we share different views on these subjects, because it is only by doing so in a spirit of acceptance and listening and being willing to explore that we're going to come to a greater truth. And I'll be honest too, there's a number of the things in here that I didn't quite follow. I didn't quite know what it meant and so forth, but you know, if I go and read those articles, I'm sure it'll be cleared up. And I'd encourage any of you who didn't understand to go and read those articles, and I can link to those in the show notes today. So thank you so much, Stephen. What a great number of comments there that you gave. Very, very interesting, and certainly something worth exploring. So, very good. If you would like to contact the podcast, either to leave your own comment or to share your own experience or just to ask a question, you can do that by calling or by emailing neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com or by calling 970-NDE-CAST. And you can also support the show by going to patreon.com/NDEcast and becoming a monthly contributor. If you do that at this point, you will have access to all of the weekly Patreon exclusive episodes. So you'll get an extra episode per week. And so that's a way to do that. Another way to support the show is to purchase my book, Life in the Spirit World. And, you know, this has been so exciting for me to see the progress of this community, to see the interaction that we get, and the way we're able to share in this loving atmosphere that is so interesting and loving, and where we can gain from each other the insights that we have. Because our collective wisdom, while there are things about our collective wisdom as society, that are just kind of out there. When we really dive deep into things relating to God and trying to understand based on our collective experiences, we can learn so much more than we can learn just on our own. And so that's really powerful. So again, everyone, to every one of you, thank you all so much for listening.